Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of Las Vegas, where the UFC is coming. We are live. This is It's Time Radio. We talk about everything you think about but are afraid to voice. Do not worry. We will talk about it for you on It's Time. This is No Holds Barred Radio, and we are here with my co-host, TJ DeSantis. TJ, how are you? Great week, but I have to get past you because we have a very special guest. This is going to be a strong show. We're going to talk about some strong topics and things that need to be discussed. We're here with my special guest, Sheriff Alex Villanueva, and the head of the LA County Sheriffs. TJ, if we're going to have a man on the show, we got to have the man on the show.
And, also, look at the man in the uniform. Like, you got to respect the uniform. My goodness, Sheriff, you're pulling it off well today.
I'm just trying to clean up for you guys.
Well, you clean up really well, and I show you as much respect as I can show you, sir. I support the police. I support the sheriffs. I support everybody. My brother, Brian Buffer, is a retired officer from Redondo Beach PD, Santa Paula PD, SWAT team leader, FTO trainer, the whole bit, and retired at, I think, in his 23rd or 25th year. He was about 50% disabled and decided to take the retirement. There were other reasons too, which I'll bring up during the course of our show, but very honored to have you on. You are the first incumbent sheriff in 2018 in the race. You were the first one to unseat an incumbent sheriff in like 100 years. That's amazing. You know, that the people stood behind you that strong.
Yeah, it had to happen, but I'll remind you that being a reformer, a progressive in 2018 vintage is not the same as 2020. Something happened with the wine harvest, and it is a upside down world right now, as you can probably see.
Yeah, totally upside down. And, you know, so upside down with things that have happened and in recent cases, you know, the George Floyd case, all that, the conviction of the officers in that case. Then I heard through the grapevine that even in your situation there, that the Board of Supervisors are trying to defund you.
I inherited a budget deficit of $101 million when I took office.
Wow.
For my predecessor, that wasn't a problem. They just put a little post-it note and receive and file.
But hey, don't worry about this. You're $100 million short.
No biggie. So when I took office, within literally 8 months, they were, oh my God, this deficit is out of control. You can't manage your budget. In fact, let me quote the famous Mark Riley Thomas, former supervisor at the time. He accused me of committing a crime, and he was asking his county council, is that a misdemeanor, about the crime of not having your budget balanced? And they were going to charge me for a crime of, yeah, that's how weird it got.
That's weird.
And then they followed it the next fiscal year, 2019 to 2020, they cut me $145 million budget deficit. 2021 now, we're going to 21-22, I'm getting defunded another $143 million. All while the costs of everything are increasing. They took away 1,300 staff positions from our department. And now we're facing three large existential threats to the safety of everyone in LA County. And their only answer is let's defund the department even more.
Give us those three threats so the people understand. First off, defunding means that you're not getting the money you need to operate, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Our structural deficit, this is baked into the formula. It floats around $400 million a year. And that is the rising cost of medical care, retiree health care, workers' compensation claims, settlements, all these things are outside of our control, and different consent decrees to running the jails, according to federal. These are federal consent decrees. It's not like we can say, we're just going to ignore it.
Right.
No. That'll put you in jail real quick.
Right.
So we're obligated to do these things, yet the county doesn't fund it. So this structural deficit keeps growing every year. Trial court funding. We're in the hole about $72 million every single year, and they don't address it. And that number keeps getting bigger and bigger. So they came to this current fiscal year. They took away $145 million. They took away 1,310, I believe, positions, while they had a $2 billion surplus in the budget.
Okay, so this doesn't compute. This doesn't compute.
No, it does not compute because no. They've ascribed to the defunding law enforcement mantra. And it's they're doing it, what I'd call it backdoor defunding. They won't tell a public, oh, we're going to defund the sheriff's department. But you look at, you read through all the reports and, oh, wow, I got defunded, $145 million. And now I'm getting defunded another $143 million in the budget that's due July 1st. So they are doubling down on stupid while the community suffers violence. You want to talk about numbers?
Yeah, please.
Here's I was going to ask you. Yeah. Fresh off the press right here.
Give us these are the crime statistics, right?
These are the crime statistics as of yesterday.
Okay.
Criminal homicide is up 95.24% for the first this part of the year, the first 5 months of this year.
In LA County.
LA County, under my jurisdiction, 95.24%.
Wow.
That number is astronomical.
That's terrifying.
Yes. Yeah. And however, not a single word has been uttered by any member of the Board of Supervisors regarding this crisis.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, that's a startling number. That's a headline grabbing number. Why yes. are we hearing about it only from you?
And if you go to the year before, the pandemic year of 2020, it went up 36%, which is a bad day in of itself.
Right. Sure.
But we got to put in the context that the rest of the nation has similar increases from 20 to 40%, all the metropolitan areas. A lot of it was driven by the pandemic and the social disarray.
Right.
We give them that. But come 2021, a new DA in office and a commitment not to hold crooks accountable for committing crime. Now we've got a homicide rate, 95.24%. Forcible rape up 7.82%. Aggravated assault up 12.94%. Grand Theft Auto up 40%, arson up 22.40%. These are all huge double-digit increases.
Yeah.
In the case of homicide, it doubled the amount, literally. And every one of these is not just a statistic, it's a human life that was either lost or violated, assaulted. And the pace of everything is happening right now is going to a very, very bad end. I worked as a young deputy on the streets 3 decades ago. I saw what violence was like up close and personal. And these people are acting as if there's no problem at all. We're just going to sing Kumbaya and let's throw money in Measure J and all those feel-good programs while people continue to die under violence and under the second existential crisis, homelessness. 5 dead bodies a day are scraped off the streets of LA. That comes out to almost 2,000 a year. Then you have the professional hand wringers. I want to talk about, oh, we have to be humane and compassionate while we humanely and compassionately let people die face down in the gutter. It's unbelievable.
Now, those 5 deaths a day for the homeless, are they homicides or are they homeless people?
No. Homeless people dropping dead from preventable medical conditions that are treatable if they had medical care. They're either drugged out, overdosed, or, you know, all kinds of conditions that with treatment, they could survive. Right now, the average life expectancy for a homeless on Skid Row, 47 years.
Wow.
That's about more than 3 decades less than if we go to the wealthy west side of town where all the woke people live. And, you know, they have their cocktail parties and discuss how wonderful they are and how humanitarian they are with their proposals.
Right. And also with the homeless people, the murder rate that's up 95%, 96%. Can any of that be attributed to the amount of homeless that are gathering? I live in the West Side in Playa del Rey. They just allowed the beach here to be a home to homeless shelters. They allowed a park over here up the street at Lincoln and Manchester where the homeless can gather. And I'm getting pings all day long of like assault, you know, threat with a knife, robbery. Yep. So do you feel that the homeless situation with the way it is in LA, I think Los Angeles is like the largest capital for homeless in the States, if I'm not mistaken, or one of them.
The entire nation, we are the center point of homelessness for the entire nation. 2 primary drivers. We have the best weather conditions.
right,
round, and we have the most gullible, supporting, nurturing people that are enabling us to become a magnet for transients from all over the nation. They come here for those free benefits, the chance to get housing that the taxpayer pays for, and they can live their lifestyle out in the open anywhere they want. And that's our failure to regulate public space. Number one sin of city and county government.
So the people that are doing this, obviously you do not agree with them. What is it within your power to fight this, if anything, the homeless situation?
Well, actually, we have a lot that's within my authority. I've been now in office 2.5 years. I've been watching very patiently as the city and the county fumbles between shirking responsibility, dodging the bullet, and making glorious plan after plan with no hard evidence that anything they do is going to improve the situation. Because for every person, every 100 people that are housed, they're replaced by 120 people on the street. Until that math changes, you cannot build your way out of the homeless problem.
Sheriff, excuse me again. Can you give me that stat one more time, please?
For every 100 people that are housed, 120 fill their space on the street.
Wow.
That's why every year the number goes up 14%, 16%, 20%. It's on pace in the next 4 years to grow 85% more than it is right now. Picture almost doubling. That's how bad the situation is. Yet you don't hear a word from the Board of Supervisors, from the mayor, from the city council about, hey, maybe we should regulate public space and designate where and how we're going to treat the homeless humanely, effectively, and dissuade all the other out-of-towners who are coming here to basically destroy our economy and our way of life.
You have a lot of numbers, Sheriff. I'm curious if the numbers have been looked at as to what the factor of why these people are homeless in the first place. Do you have any information on, you know, median age or what sort of situation these people were in prior to, you know, ending up here?
Like mental illness? Well,
right. According to the, they do a homeless count every year. It got interrupted with a pandemic, but I think the year 19 had the best count at that point. And they had 66,000 homeless in that count for 2019. That number has gone over 70,000 by now, we know for sure. 14%, according to their count, this is their count, 14% were out of state.
Wow.
Which means they had 5 years or less being in LA County and they came out of state. They were homeless out of state. They came here. That number in real numbers is over 10,000 of our homeless today are homeless from out of state, enjoying everything we have to offer them. So we have to keep that in mind. When it comes to the mental illness and substance abuse, they are about 70% of the homeless population, 70. However, this is where you're going to be upset. I know you guys are both outstanding taxpayers.
Yes.
I believe Catherine Barger spent $400 million for a mental treatment facility up in the high desert for a total of 60 beds.
Wait, what?
What?
Yeah.
$400 million for 60?
Yep. $400 million for 60.
Whose pocket did that go into? Oh, my God.
That's the number I got. We're verifying it, but that looks like it's a solid number. Remember, they canceled our mental health treatment center downtown L.A. Yes. To replace Men's Central Jail. That was going to have 3,885 beds, which would give us a place to put the people that are felony charges incompetent to stand trial for treatment, and also have a capacity to house single man cells, the most violent people that we have in our jail system, where there's no option to just tear down the place and nowhere for them to go. These are people who literally eat other people.
Right.
We have to keep them out of harm's way, keep the rest of the inmate population, the staff out of harm's way, single man cells.
I'm sorry, this number blows me away. That number you mentioned for the facility, that breaks down to roughly $6,666,666.67 per bed.
Quite a bargain, isn't it?
Yeah. I just stayed at a very nice place for my weekend for a vacation, but it was nothing like that would have been for $6 million a bed. Jeez.
Buffer, you just need to be homeless, apparently.
I'm blown away by all this. These stats are blowing me away.
No. The $400 million, brace yourself for this, that's chump change. the city of LA goes through about $700 million a year in homeless services. Most of that money goes into salary and employee benefits of city workers.
That's kind of like giving a dollar to a charity and 5 cents makes the charity. It's all
exactly
going to the charity.
There you go. Every supervisor, and I flow this idea to the supervisors, and no, they couldn't walk back fast enough. If you're not going to replace Men's Central Jail with a mental health treatment center, well, you're going to have to find room for 500 to 600 bed facilities in each one of your districts to make up for the difference. Oh, no, we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid that, because all the NIMBYism and everything else. But wait a minute. We had a site already approved, plans approved, ready to pour concrete. They paid $80 million penalty for canceling the mental health treatment center. And they say they're going to be community-based alternatives. There is no community-based alternatives. There are none. They will never get one. They're going to wait till their time in office is done, and, oh, they'll kick the can to the next guy.
So what they're basically doing is shoving everybody over there to stay away from here and approving whatever ridiculous amount of money it is to keep it over there so they don't have to deal with it, period.
Right, and they just want to ignore the plight that's unfolding right under their feet. People dropping dead. You have the fires being started by the homeless up in Pacific Palisades, on the Strand in Venice. I walked it last week. That was an eye-opener. We had a nice conversation with a gentleman. I think his name was LaShawn. Male white kid from Maryland, homeless in Maryland, goes to Tennessee, December of 2020. He decides, hey, you know what? Tennessee is not the best place in December. Let me go to sunny LA County and on the Strand in Venice. So he's there smoking dope about 12 hours of the day and sitting back on a office chair on the Strand, eating cookies the other 12 hours of the day. He looks like he's 50. He's only 22.
Wow.
His arms had more wrinkles than I'm, and I'm almost three times his age.
Right.
That is scary. And that is the face of the problem in Venice. We've enabled it, and we refuse to regulate public space. I mean, not we, the city of LA.
Right.
LAPD can do the job.
Right.
But when the mayor and the city council handcuffs the cops, they're left in a very awkward position where the public expects them to defend them and their hands are tied by the politicians and all they can do is write tickets, which the transients just crumble up and throw in their face and laugh at them.
I've watched the situation get worse and worse because I used to have a beach home down in the Marina Peninsula next to Venice. And I've watched the homeless build down there and build. Now it's happening on the peninsula. You come out of your, you know, which most of those homes down there are minimum $1 million, $2 million, whatever. Yep. You walk out. And I'm not putting them down by saying this, but saying you walk out and the homeless are all in front and people are actually unable to sell their homes now, you know, in some cases. And nobody's going to spend $1 million, $2 million, $3 million or whatever for a home if they don't have the use of their home, you know, and this is what's going on. And now in Playa del Rey, which is next to Marina del Rey, it's slowly, the Venice situation is slowly creeping up because they're allowing this. And I don't even know what this is going to be like in 3 or 4 years.
So here's my question, guys. I mean, obviously I think all three of us are of, you know, sound mind. We're in a good mental state. So maybe this question doesn't apply necessarily because we talked about the mental health and the substance abuse, but I want to believe in my heart of hearts that the people that are, you know, making up this transient number, they would be the type of people that would want to improve their situation if opportunity presented itself. Is there opportunity, Sheriff, that are being made available for these people to better their situations, or how do we fix this rather than manage this?
Well, there's a lot of things. There's some uncomfortable conversations we have to have. We can go the 30,000 foot conversation. Let's do the 300 foot conversation and foot on the ground. Let's start with our feet on the ground first.
Right.
We can manage the situation and improve the conditions here in LA County where we can provide housing for those that are truly gravely disabled, the mentally ill. We can do that on an emergency basis right now. We have the resources to build the shelter space and basically assume control of city and county properties that are public domain already and get those empty warehouses. Let's start filling them up with bed space and cots. And let's triage just like on the battlefield. Mm. People that need the care, we can get them off the streets right away. Then there's a crowd that says, well, I don't want to accept any shelters or I don't want to accept any rules because I like the fact this guy that I met in Venice said, I like the, what do you call it? I'm a drifter. I like the nomadic lifestyle. Literally said that. and we have it on tape. It was pretty choice a conversation. That crowd is a crowd that I'm interested in and telling them bye. We want to send them on a one-way bus ticket back to where they came from. We'll give them the alternative. In fact, we'll give them the means to go back to where their families, where their support system exists. But it's not in LA. We should not shoulder the burden of the homeless problem for the entire nation.
Right.
And this is a federal level. Now let's go up in steps a bit. At the county level, at the federal level, it's a regional crisis. We have to treat it and triage it as a regional problem. I have the authority as sheriff to actually, in fact, let's pull up the three codes. Where's a printout 26600, 601, and 602? This is good information for you and your viewers. I know I had a supervisor already ask, hey, what is he doing in Venice there, the sheriff? That's LAPD jurisdiction. And we say, the bear goes everywhere. It's LA County. A simple answer, but we'll give you more specific on that.
I like it.
And now we're moving up the state level. Governor Newsom wants to defend a recall by just shoveling a ton of money off planes, I guess, I know, release them in the sky to float down to the earth for the homeless situation. He lost $11 billion plus, possibly up to $30 billion on the EDD fraud. That would have paid for an awful lot of goods and services that get people off their, you know, on their feet and back into some semblance of normalcy where they can reintegrate in society. We have a homeless outreach service team. We established the five-step county protocol to deal with breaking up encampments. It is a very compassionate, common sense one that has a finality to it. And we said, okay, at this point, we've identified all the bed space, we comply with the Boise agreement, and it's time to leave. And we're gonna assist you in leaving, but they will leave. And then we clean up behind them and restore it to its original state. That is a five-step process we're using. We already started on the 101 freeway in Olvera Street. And it takes a while because we talk to everyone first, get everyone's individual, assess what their needs are, where they're at in the scheme of things. And some people start realizing the game's up. They start leaving on their own, which is fine. But the ones that can't leave, don't want to leave, and they're just dug in there, those are the ones we end up moving at the end. And it's been doing successfully, but in places that are not visible normally because they were out in the boonies, in the riverbeds, at the edge of the mountains, the canyons. Places are in the railroad right-of-ways that you don't usually see them. But we've been there, so we've been testing this again and again. They've done thousands of placements, zero uses of force, two arrests. And there were two arrests that, they're wanted for murder or something. Yeah, I think we got to arrest them.
Right.
That was it. So their track record is phenomenal, to the point that among the homeless, they have the reputation of being the go-to person to defend them, to get something done, to match a need with a resource. Mm-hmm. They actually ask the deputies when the social workers show up, you know, the ones with the clipboards that are highly trained, that crowd, they actually ask the deputy, hey, can I talk to that person? Because that's how well they establish a rapport with the community, because they know they're there to help them.
Right, right. So is your outlook for the power that you have in your control and the people that are following what you would like to see done, do you have an optimistic outlook for the next year or a pessimistic outlook where this is going to go?
I have an optimistic outlook, and we're going to focus on some easy, visible wins early on. So we're going on the 101 corridor from downtown LA to Universal Studios, and we're including Olvera Street in that corridor. And I got to take a pause right here and identify a monumental act of galactical stupidity.
Okay.
Olvera Street. It's hard to get parking for Olvera Street. So why on earth would you take an entire parking lot dedicated to Olvera Street and convert it into a homeless shelter? I guess screw the Mertens, screw the tourists, screw the industry and all the mom and pop shops, the little kiosks, everybody who depends on Olvera Street to put bread on the table.
Right.
That became a lower priority than doing a visible show of, oh, look at us. We're doing something good. Look at me move to put that those mobile homes on the former parking lot for Olvera Street.
It almost seems like you're allowing homelessness to create homelessness with that kind of an attitude.
Yes, it breeds its own weather climate. Just like when you have the wildland fires, that it creates its own climate.
Right.
It doesn't And homelessness is the exact same scenario. It creates its own climate. And what we're doing is we're normalizing deviancy and dependency on handout. So more people are attracted to that because now, okay, there's no social stigma of being zombied out, butt naked, covered in feces, wandering around Skid Row. And, oh, okay, that's so-and-so, that's it.
Yeah.
You go into a normal neighborhood, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, there's something wrong here.
Right. And then there's another thing I heard, and I know you would like to address this too. You know, with marijuana being legalized the way it is and regulated the way it is and state by state, I'm a true believer that if you make that the feds should make a federal law that's good for every state. I just, whether it's gun control or whatever, I think if it was uniform in every state, it'd be controlled much better than like gun control here in California, but you can go over to Arizona or Vegas and buy a gun and drive it back illegally, you know, that kind of thing. I should be every state following. I gather you feel the same way. So now with the homeless situation, like just downtown and that 1 mile rate, whatever that is, 1 mile square, Skid Row, whatever, how big that's considered. I hear that there's still illegal pot being sold, even with all the stores and everything. Marijuana still is a big illegal operation here in LA. Is that something you're dealing with? I you mentioned
that's my that's third on my list. On my list of the big three, that is number three. That is illegal marijuana grows and the illegal marijuana dispensaries. They're taking over the high desert and altering the way of life in our own communities now. The same thing with the dispensaries here in the basin area. They're becoming a threat to neighborhoods because they pop up in neighborhoods, commercial districts, everywhere you can think of, they're popping up. In fact, the illegal dispensaries outnumber the legal ones 50 to 1.
But as a consumer, not meaning I'm consuming it, but I mean, as a marijuana, for a marijuana consumer, they don't know the difference between a legal shop and a regular shop. They
exactly.
Dispensary. So they if you, if the officers or the LAPD sheriffs know the illegal ones, do you have to go through a lot of procedure to close them down, or can you just go right in and close them down?
We can close them down fairly quickly and efficiently. The problem is they pop right back up. And their business model for the illegal dispensary is, hey, as long as I'm in, as long as my doors are open for 2 weeks, even if I get busted at the end of the 2 weeks, I made so much money in 2 weeks, I'll take the hit, I'll close down, I'll reopen again in a day, or I'll just move a block away somewhere else and start all over again. That's how incentivized it is to cheat the marijuana dispensary laws that we have here on the books in California. Totally. They didn't think this thing all the way through.
Right. So then if a person gets busted and closed down, they have it on the record, they open up again, they get busted and closed down. They open up again, they get busted and closed down. How many times do you get busted before you literally should go to jail, you know, or whatever?
What we have to start chasing the landowners, the property owners, and we start confiscating the property. Then we're playing for keeps.
Gotcha.
And people don't want to lose real estate.
Right.
In the meantime, they're more than happy to write off a loss of product. If they at least sold it for, you know, 2 weeks, we'll take the loss. But and then we're destroying the ability of the legal shops to operate.
Yeah, exactly. No, they have no. That's what a catch 22. I mean, it's like you do one good on one end and it closes you down on the other.
You're screwing both ends of the deal. And then to make matters worse, this is the pied de resistance on the whole deal. This is how smart Sacramento is. Let's ban them from using ATM cards and banks and all these stuff. Although some of that is tied to the federal government that has a ban on using the banking system for these. So the entire operation is cash, which means you get robbed, you get murdered. It happens all the time now. And that's part of the rising violence. So actually, problem number one and problem number three are starting to become interconnected.
So these dispensaries, they are experiencing a lot of robberies and
yes,
murders, like you said. There's a lot of focus on them to get in there and get that cash.
Well, there was a fact, it was just in the news, I want to say a few days ago, there was three men and a woman who were found guilty. They kidnapped a dispensary owner, drove him to the high desert, cut off his penis, tortured him, and buried him, left him for dead. He survived, I believe. His penis didn't survive.
Yeah.
And so they were found guilty. I think the main guy got life without. And I think the last one just got sentenced this week. I think it was a getaway driver was a female. No, she was the one that kind of invited the guy thinking one thing and She was actually the accomplice. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Horrendous crime, but symbolic of this cash operation. They thought he had $1 million buried in the high desert. So they were going to torture him to get to that cash.
Unbelievable. I mean, believable, but unbelievable. That's just.
Yes, exactly.
It's so crazy. So what about the fentanyl issue? This is a big, the fentanyl overdoses yes. seem to become a very serious issue. Did this go hand in hand with homeless and the other things we're discussing, or is it just a drug addiction, no matter where it's in a problem?
It's hitting the homeless, it's hitting everywhere. The fentanyl is popping up now. People are, they're manufacturing like OxyContin and other, what looks like a prescription medication, but it's laced with fentanyl.
Right.
So people that are saying, I'm going to cheat and get my mom's medicine cabinet are taking a fentanyl-laced pill, they wind up dead the next morning. And they're not hardcore drug addicts or anything. Someone who is experimenting, they're dead. So we have a movement. There's a bill in Sacramento, SB 500, I want to say it is. 500 or 555. And believe it or not, it was blocked by Democrats in Sacramento because we were going to hold people accountable for knowingly selling fentanyl that causes the death of someone. But they don't want to add any charge in Sacramento that increases the potential of jail time for anybody, no matter how much tragedies. And this is, kids are dying with the very first use of an experimental drug like this.
Is this amongst mostly young people, or is it spread out all through all demographics?
Mostly young. It's targeting kids everywhere. It's also impacting, remember our defunding?
Yes.
Fentanyl is now being introduced into the jail system. It's very easy to conceal. They blend it with other things. We find it on postage stamps. It comes in legal correspondence. It's dipped in it. And with the defunding movement, we lost a lot of our canine narco dogs that could sniff all this stuff.
Right.
And we lost narcotics detectives that can do a lot of investigations of people trying to introduce drugs into the jail system. So because they're defunding, we're now losing inmates due to overdoses that are preventable inside the jail system. Again, another ramification from the defunding movement.
Yeah, the 6 degrees of separation from the defunding movement are just horrific. You know, and then I think about the other thing. One of the complaints my brother had, which is one of the reasons he retired, and he retired about 20 years ago, but he started to notice that the quality, you know, they were lowering the quality of the officer that can become the candidate. The person, man or woman, that could become a candidate to be an officer, whether it was, as an example, and tell me if I'm off, you know, 5'8" height requirements going down to 5'4", or, you know, the type of candidate coming in. Now, my brother always raved about, because he trained with the sheriffs in some special training, that he always raved about the LA sheriff's training, the academy, just the best. But when he noticed as a Redondo Beach officer, these people coming in and some of the training he got, he was worried about the future and the quality of officers being out there. Which some of the incidents we have around the country that have been well publicized. Do you agree, as I feel, that maybe the training is not as good as it should be for these officers? They're not getting the type of training to deal with these situations, with the restrictions that face them and everything else in these situations. Is training a big issue, in your opinion, of officers across the country? And I say this with all the respect to the sheriffs and their fantastic training program, but looking at how other departments are working, do you see this as an issue?
Well, when you have defunding of law enforcement, I'm talking across the entire nation,
the first
item that goes off in the budget is the training budget. Because to train anybody who, say, a working cop on the street, I got to pull him off the street to send him to a day of training. But someone still has to go do his job. Right. Or a guy working one of the modules in custody, I can't just pull him out. Someone has to stay there. So it takes a lot of money to pull people out of their assignment to send them to training. And I agree with you, we have the best trainers on the planet are working in our department. Yep. They're dedicated, they're motivated, they have so much things. A lot of them Krav Maga. We have UFC fighters now who are trainers as well. We have a ton of people that are training. We have a good group of kids coming in. When we open up for hiring, the line walks, wraps around the building. Everybody wants to become a deputy sheriff. We raise the educational standard now to an associate's degree. So we're getting a better educated applicant and we're filling the positions. But the county froze the hiring. When they froze the hiring, they basically collapsed the entire machine that allows us to bring kids in, bring kids from the jails to patrol to the specialized units, patrol to promotion, the sergeant, lieutenant, it basically freezes all of the movement within the organization, and training is one of the major impacts on that process.
And what a lot of people don't realize, and I assume it's still in effect, is that the new sheriff coming in has to serve, what is it, 2 years in the jails? Is that still the case where they start off in the jails and they work in the jails?
It averages about 2 years right now.
Wow.
Used to be upwards of 7 years.
Really?
When we had a hiring freeze back in the 90s. It went up to 7 years. Then it went down to four. And now it's between 2 and 4. But some kids go out in a year or less.
Right. What is starting pay for an officer these days coming in?
For our department, it's roughly $70,000 a year, depending on your education level. We have three different step ones, two and three. A three is about $70K. And our benefits package is hands down real good.
My brother loves the fact he has health insurance the rest of his life. That's for sure.
Yes. So one thing we haven't allowed the budget cuts to hurt is we continue to do our training for active shooter. We just did a large scale one recently, I believe it was in the High Desert or Los Hills. Yeah, High Desert. So we're continuing doing this type of training, and it's a collaborative effort. We involve local agencies, the fire department, school districts, for example, and we walk through the whole process and we get people, you know, dressed up, role playing. Very good training, and we need more of it. But now the challenge is in-service training for our deputies in patrol. That's our number one priority.
Right, and I can see that too. But then proof in point of what you just said is yesterday, the horrific incident that happened in the fire department where the firemen went into his department and was it killed one and wounded another, I think?
Yes.
And then set fire to his home where he killed himself or in the end?
Killed himself and burned his home down. And the deputy who, or the firefighter who was a captain, he used to be a deputy sheriff. He lateraled over to the fire department.
Wow. So what about fire department? Obviously this is an isolated case, but it can certainly happen again. The fire department during riots has been shot at, or assaulted, whatever. I mean, are they allowed to protect themselves? Do you think an eventuality that there's going to be weapons on fire trucks, with the way life is going in this world?
I don't think you'll see weapons on a fire truck. You'll see armed firemen because that's not their role.
If there is a credible threat,
we do provide escort to them. In fact, when we do have an active shooter or some hot scene where there's still exchange of gunfire, we stage our fire at a safe distance, a block or two away, where they're close by, where they can roll in. And then once we give them the all clear, then they'll roll in and start triaging the wounded. And we do that, unfortunately, too often now because it's becoming that frequent.
Wow.
And for example, the case yesterday with the guy who burning down his house, it was considered a hot zone. And we repelled one of our SWAT team members off our Air 5 rescue helicopter to the ground. He did a quick visual, ascertained there was one down outside the house by the pool area. It looked like he was suffering from a gunshot wound to the head. And then they walked back and said, "We're not going to touch it. We don't know what's in the house. Let it burn down." And that's what they did. And then when it was clear, then they went in and did all the things they had to do for the crime scene.
Sheriff, I commend you on everything you have on your plate and all you have to watch over. But with all we discussed, what's the good news? What's the good news, Sheriff?
I'm going to give you some good news. I know it can be kind of depressing at times, but
it's reality. We all have to face reality.
It's overwhelming, is what it is.
Yeah, it's I'm running a $3.5 billion enterprise, so to speak, and it's probably the most complex law enforcement agency in the nation because of all the different things that we do. We're not one faceted where we just do patrol. We have to do patrol. We have to do custody. We have to do special operations, air support, our detective division. There are probably some of the most senior and experienced investigators in the nation in terms of homicides, frauds, organized crime, all these things. We have to run the bailiffs and man security for the entire court system. The LA Community College District campus, we have our presence on 9 of the campuses. The Transportation Services Bureau, and we have Metrolink. So we're spread out over 600 miles or 600 miles of track in 4 different counties, because we also serve as security for Metrolink and then for the Gold Line with the MTA. So we're busy spread all over everywhere.
Yeah.
And But what this does, it allows us to really positively impact the quality of people's lives throughout the county, because we're that last line of defense.
Yes.
And some good news, because our homeless outreach service team, Lieutenant Jeff Diedrich, he's our guy who actually initiated the five-step protocol. And while we were debating how we were going to address now shifting over to regulating public space for the entire county, we did it during civil unrest. And there were some lessons learned there about, wow, there's limitations on municipal police departments. Right. They can do a wonderful job if they're not handcuffed by the mayor and the city council or their city manager. That is the big if. We don't suffer that limitation, so we can go everywhere. But here's three sections of the California Government Code. I want to read them to you, if I may.
Please do. Please do.
Government Code Section 26600. This is the duties of the sheriff. The sheriff shall preserve peace, and to accomplish this object may sponsor, supervise, or participate in any project of crime prevention, rehabilitation of persons previously convicted of crime, or the suppression of delinquency. That's pretty broad terms, right?
Yes, yes.
They get better. 26601, the sheriff shall arrest and take before the nearest magistrate for examination all persons who attempt to commit or have committed a public offense. That includes misdemeanor crimes.
Gotcha.
Now you realize, holy, that's a big, and the third one, it's my favorite one. The sheriff shall prevent and suppress any affrays, breaches of the peace, riots, and insurrections that come to his or her knowledge, and investigate public offenses which have been committed. The sheriff may execute all orders of the local health officer issued for the purpose of preventing the spread of any contagious or communicable disease. So that is, and 2604 was a really nice one, but they got rid of it. I think it was just in the last few years, the posse comitatus, the sheriff shall command the aid of as many inhabitants of the sheriff's county as he or she thinks necessary in the execution of his or her duties. That, so that got thrown out.
That got thrown out.
Yeah, but I'll live with the first three.
Which gives you freedom to protect and serve, right?
Anywhere in the county.
Anywhere in the county, even if you're in an LAPD area?
Yep. In fact, yeah, during the civil unrest, we went to help LAPD. We were in the Fairfax District.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Beverly Hills. We assisted them. We went to Santa Monica, mm-hmm. 2 hours too late because they were not too sure what to do. And by the time they figured it out, the promenade had burned down.
Right.
We went to Long Beach, and I personally was out there with the troops at midnight chasing looters through the alleys. And so we went, and we realized none of our jurisdictions suffered losses from arson, vandalism, looting, or anything in any of our jurisdictions. And we had protests in some of them, but none of them had the damage because we regulated and we defended public spaces, and we did not permit civil unrest or a peaceful protest to transition into rioting and looting.
Well, kudos to you and your department, Sheriff. Kudos to you and your department, because I mean, the stats prove that you're doing it right. You know, you're doing the best that you can do in this situation. I noticed that there's campaigns now. I'm out for one of them too, but CCWs now are being, mm-hmm. where they were possible to get, are now potentially able to get if you qualify.
Yes.
Is that a way of the law enforcement not enlisting, but private citizens, maybe because of what we're facing, the crime we're facing, that you feel that now, based on qualification, such as myself, that we should be allowed to carry concealed weapons trained properly and licensed properly?
You said it best. You're trained properly, licensed properly. All I'm asking for is give me a good cause why you need to have to be armed in public. Because there's a bit of a risk. And we're rolling the dice on this, so we have to assume that everyone's going to act responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
So all we ask is give me that good cause, a good definition of it.
Gotcha.
And you're in your particular case. And under McDonald, my predecessor, in 4 years, he did 194 CCW permits. As of right now, I'm sitting on 904 that have already been issued, and I have 360 that are in the queue.
Gotcha.
Or in the hopper, ready to come out. So we're gonna pass the 1,000 mark. My goal is to increase it by 400%. I think I went way past my goal. And we're not lowering any standard. We're actually making it realistic and achievable, because right now we have less cops, more crooks, less consequences for violent crime, Yes, it's a calculated decision on my part that I want to arm as many responsible people as I can just to improve public safety.
The conceal and carry permit, is that for the county only or is that for the state?
This is for my county.
Okay.
My jurisdiction ends at the county. However, it is good for, you can use it throughout the state.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was curious. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be a resident of the county.
Okay.
Resident of the county, but you can't go out of state. Like I can't go to Vegas.
Well, maybe it depends. Yeah. There are some states like where I'm from, Minnesota. If you have it in Minnesota, you can carry it in other states in the Midwest that recognize it.
Yeah. There's some states that'll honor other states' CCWs. There's some states, as long as you can fog a mirror, you get a CCW. So it doesn't matter.
Well, you know, I know we're reaching our limit of time here, Sheriff, but I got to tell you, this has been a fascinating show talking to you. I could talk to you for another couple hours with everything we're discussing, but I want to truly commend you and your department on the excellent service that you give in protecting and serving us as police officers to us citizens. You've blown my mind with some of these statistics. You freaked me out with a couple others.
Hey, I just want my $6 million bed. I don't know about you guys.
But I mean, you made me feel good on the fact that, you know, there are people have to understand the quality of the officer in the sheriff's department. They have to understand the quality of the officer that we have protecting and serving us here in LA County and be very thankful for it. And I'm going to say it as I say it every single show almost, support your local police, support your deputies. Okay. We all hear these stories out there. You can put 10 men in a room. There's always going to be a couple of bad ones. Okay. Or one bad one. That's just the way life is. But
let me just say $70,000 a year, Buff, is a lot of money. Not enough for me to have to do that gig.
No, it's a lot of money, but compared to even 5-10 years ago, I think officers were starting at like 40 or 50, and now officers
are
six figures. And I wish they all made $250,000 walking out there. Just like I wish a fighter made $1 million every time he walked in to put his life on the line, no matter how you cut it. Sheriff Villanueva, his deputies, they put their lives on the line every day they put on that uniform.
You're going to be hard pressed to find someone to bitch about how much money someone is making to protect you. You know what I mean? At least in my mind, like if my safety is up for grabs, I want my guys to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I want them to be insensitized every morning they wake up to put on that uniform and do the amazingly difficult job that the men and women of the Sheriff's Department have to go out and do.
The bear goes everywhere. I love that saying, by the way.
I remember when I was a young airman in the active duty military, I was in the Air Force. And Air Force, they're a stickler for attention to detail and following instructions. And they take care of the airmen. They have the best housing, the best food. Everything is available to them to the point that the Marines and the Army, they whine about, man, we want to go to the air base to get treated right. And that's ongoing for it. It's always a running joke. Everybody talks, you know, smack about the Air Force, except the fact when you're active duty, you wish you're in the Air Force because you get treated royally. And the question is why? Because I was explained, if you're fixing a $1 billion aircraft that people are sitting in, they depend on you to not be blurry eyed and putting the wrong screw in the wrong hole and cause that plane to crash. You want them rested, comfortable, and ready to do their job at 24 hours a day. So I said, okay, you know, that makes an awful lot of sense.
I don't think you can argue that point one bit. I think it makes a lot of sense as long as you're not spending $66 million or $6 million on a bed. It's all good.
Exactly.
Sure, it's been a true pleasure to have you on the show today. A true pleasure to meet you virtually, as they say. But you have my support 150%. And anything I can ever do to do a motivational video or anything or an appearance for the Sheriff's Department, please know that I'm there to help serve. And help do whatever I can do to support you in any way I can.
Oh, I definitely appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Is there anything you'd like to tell us before we sign off? Or
actually, on behalf of all the men and women of our department, we want to thank you for your support for law enforcement, all your viewers, and know it that now that we have body-worn cameras, we get to capture all the good and the bad things that happen.
Yes.
And that priceless video of that deputy in San Dimas getting verbally accosted by that lady in that car, that he was a killer, a murderer, this and that, his professionalism, he did not skip a beat.
Right.
That's symbolic of the dedication and professionalism of every single person who wears tan and green in this department.
Fantastic. And thank you so much. That's all I can say. Definitely. And tremendous respect, sir. Tremendous respect for all
of you guys. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you so much. Take care, sir, and stay safe, okay?
Will do. You too.
I look forward to meeting you in person.
Yes, well, I do too.
When are you getting that CCW buff?
Well, I don't want to make anything too public, but I think it's something that needs to be applied for. Let's put it that way.
I mean, we've talked a lot about that subject over the years, and I'm pretty confident that we've kept the same tone throughout our gun control and gun safety discussion. It just needs to be sensible. It just needs to be based in logic, and the execution needs to be something that is not, you know, driven by an agenda on either side of the aisle. And I don't know. I mean, I'm from a state where you need to do a little bit more than fog a mirror to get your CCW, but you do get it relatively easy compared to other states. And I mean, if you feel like you need to have a weapon on you for protection, and you're able to meet the minimum standards for that, it's well within your right. I think it's something that certain people should do. For me, not so much. I mean, I can't find my phone. I don't want to worry about like where I keep my revolver. But for others, it's definitely something that needs to be explored.
Well, I think that Sheriff Villanueva put it perfectly, is that, you know, if you qualify and you have good reasoning and you go through the training, then you have a right to have it. And
right.
I think that's
the answer. The answer of why do you need one? Just because that doesn't fly.
No, that doesn't fly. You know, I mean, my reasoning for ever wanting a CCW is my own reasoning. I'm not going to make public, but it's very good, solid reasoning.
Oh, we've talked about it off the air. And yeah.
And I would be a good person to have it if I ever got it. But,
you're also someone that's not foreign to those things as well. You're like
a gun
guy.
I've been around weapons my whole life. Yeah, I've had a lot of training, and you have to get more training even to get a CCW. But here's the thing. The way they do it here in LA County, the way that Sheriff is doing it, makes complete sense to me versus the open carry issue or the open carry laws in like the state of Texas,
where you right. have those
that have no training, no background. You don't know who's
that's lunacy them. Buff. That's not sensible.
I mean, there's some law. I forget the name of the law where you can actually face off and draw your gun. I forget. It's some, I don't want to,
I mean, it sounds like a duel. You know what I mean? Like it sounds like the 1800s.
The bottom line is just like an officer being trained properly to carry a gun and act properly. If you have a CCW or concealed weapons permit, you should have the training and have the reasoning to have it. And the background check, just like a background check to buy a gun,
right?
The background check to get a CCW should be even more so.
Right. I mean, you and I have been very vocal about the checks and balances that need to be in play just to buy a firearm, let alone carry one. But here's my thing. My father had a conceal and carry permit, and he told me about the class that he took, and he said upon taking the class and being issued the permit, the worst thing that he could imagine is ever having to pull it, because they say day one in that class, if you have to rely on pulling your weapon, you're going to court. Like bare minimum, you're going to court. God forbid you have to use it, and then your whole life is going to be maybe even worse. But the bottom line is you're going to be alive. At least that's the theory. That's the hope in carrying something like that. But
the classic line is I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6.
I mean, that's a hell of a line.
It's one of Brian's favorites. The favorite one to say, but it's a reality.
Yeah.
Anyway, getting off that, because that's a reality we face in everyday life these days, no matter where we live. But this is very interesting. The statistics he gave, I mean, the 96% increase in homicide alone.
I mean, that's startling. That's startling.
Completely startling.
It's June.
78% in rape. That's horrific.
These are things that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I come down on different sides of you know, how you combat these things. The bottom line is that whatever we're doing right now is not working, because that's a huge increase.
But I will say that Sheriff Villanueva versus other people from governor status, you name it, he's got a great attitude. And I believe and appreciate the way he's approaching this.
It's having the conversation, right? Like he's talking about it. Like I feel a lot of these situations, we sort of like pander to, you know, the sensitivities of everyone without actually getting to the real issue. I don't mind if you disagree with me, but I do want to hear your side. And a lot of people, I don't think, really get their point of view across, because they're afraid at times, especially, you know, the sheriff's an elected official. They're afraid at times to alienate people or be misunderstood or misinterpreted, and that can be career suicide. But the sheriff, I mean, he's says it in real hard facts.
Listen, he's not the head sheriff of LA County for nothing. And as a voter in LA County, if you're listening to the show and you're realizing the incumbent sheriff he took over from in 2018, what he's doing to make our city a better city, then you better vote for him when it comes up for re-election and keep this man in office, because this is the kind of person that we need. Not only the way he follows his job, but how he keeps the entire sheriff's department being the elite of the elite police department that they are, along with LAPD.
I think that is, you know, something that is sort of great and amazing about an elected official like the sheriff is, you know, those numbers are going to be there regardless of whether or not they benefit or speak, you know, ill of his job. So when it comes to polling times, you can look at those same numbers that he said and you can go, okay, why are these numbers this way? Does it, you know, have anything to do with how we've been led? And then you can make the change. There are, I mean, you said it, there haven't been a lot of changes as far as new sheriffs coming in and defeating old ones. So, you know, people wanted a change. We'll see if that change, you know, happens here and how long Sheriff Villanueva is in power.
Well, he's in office. He's fighting for change. He's fighting for the best thing, that the best results of what he's fighting for to be, hopefully, the result.
You're getting what you voted for right now.
Well, you can be like somebody else that people voted for who resigns from city council because they do nothing or whatever has happened, like Tito Ortiz.
I wondered if we were going to get there. I know. I wondered if we were going to get there.
I mean, Tito Ortiz. I'm sorry, Tito, buddy. I've known you for a long time. But
well,
there's something different about an elected official who won't follow policy. And then through whatever reasoning, I haven't followed it exactly, but I haven't read a lot of positive things about his service as city council. And now
here's the issue, Bruce. I literally don't know what his beliefs are really on much of anything or what he wanted to do to address issue. I mean, granted, I'm not all hip to Huntington Beach's issues, but I will say everything that we ever heard about Tito in that position was him saying something that made him look, you know, a bit foolish or trying to get unemployment benefits. And he seemed to take umbrage with people, quote unquote, leaking things about him and character assassination. I don't care if you're the best politician in the world. People are going to try to tear you down. That's that business, unfortunately.
They love you on the way up, and they can't wait to tear you down once you're in office.
Right.
And during all the publicity or the PR or the news stories on Tito, and again, with all respect to Tito, I'm not trying to say anything bad. I'm just saying what I read. All I heard was, I don't wear a mask.
Right.
And I don't wear a mask.
Right.
And you shouldn't buy hamburgers from this place because they wouldn't serve me because I didn't wear a mask.
Right. By the way, he doesn't wear a mask.
I know that. And I got that now.
I mean, here's my thing, Bruce. Again, I don't know really what his politics are or what he did to enact change.
I never saw any publicity about his politics.
But here's, I mean, I knew he leaned right. You know, he was conservative, obviously ties with Donald Trump. But my issue with this is you want to enact change. You want to be a leader. It's not an easy job. And Tito is not someone who is new to difficult situations in their lives. You know, he's gone through a lot.
Yeah, of course he has.
Why quit? That's what I don't understand.
That's my point. Tito has always achieved greatness in many areas that he's gotten into.
Right.
And he finishes those, he finished what he started. So the opposition or whatever must have been so extreme, or maybe he just couldn't handle it anymore. He wasn't comfortable and he resigned.
Whatever
his reasoning is his reasoning. I was just very surprised that I read this.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He said something along the lines of like the safety of his children were at risk, which I don't know what
safety
that means.
Children. His children?
Yes. And I don't know what that means, what that entails. Right. It's possible. Threats, yeah. But I mean, the idea of walking away from city council, like, I mean, maybe there's some maniac after him. Like, I don't know. Like that sounds scary, but
there very well could be. But if you walk away from city council, I think you just walked away from whatever political aspirations you had in your
career. This is it. Yeah. Yes. There's no way he, you know, parlays this into something else. You can't resign office, you know, no offense, but at that low of a level in city office and try to spin it forward. No.
Here's a couple of quick stories. Again, Tito, all respect. I hope everything's cool. Jake Paul is going to fight Tyron Woodley.
I talked about this a couple weeks ago. Remember, this is the suggestion I had. Yeah, I'm floored that it's happening. I think
Tyron's going to make more cash than he ever made. He said in one fight.
Yeah, I think that shows a lot of confidence in Jake Paul because, I mean, Tyron Woodley is a striker. I mean, when you compare Tyron to Ben Askren, I mean, we're talking, you know, worlds of difference. We'll see how that plays out. I mean, Tyron has had a bit of an issue in his last few fights in pulling the trigger. He's going to definitely have to, you know, be aggressive and take the initiative in a boxing match. I talked to him a week and a half ago. He said he'd come on the show. This is before this was announced. Oh, no, so
we're going to have him on the show. Yeah. But in respect to what you said, the triggers he has to pull now is only two, not over 40. Okay, there's only two triggers.
I understand that, Bruce. I understand that, but I mean, boxing in a sense is simpler, but also much more complex at the same time.
Much more complex. It's a very difficult art to learn.
Yeah, I mean, sweet
really,
science,
when it's
right?
What it takes to be a good boxer, they're intricate. That's why they call it the sweet science.
Right.
That's why it's called the sweet science.
But I will say, all of that intricacy aside, if Tyron Woodley lands clean on the chin of Jake Paul, we're talking about something completely different.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens, you know? So
but Paul's going to be a lot taller though, right? He should have the reach on Tyron.
He's like 6 feet tall, 6'1".
Yeah.
Tyron's 5'8", 5'9" at best.
Yeah. I know Tyron has a bit longer of a reach than his height sort of suggests, but I mean, that's going to be something that I think we're going to actually see a competitive match here. Tyron opened up as the favorite.
Tyron did.
Yeah, well, minus 120, I believe.
Minus 120, yeah, I did see that. That's right. Well, you know, look, we'll find out when Logan Paul fights the great Floyd Mayweather, the great boxer Floyd Mayweather.
We'll find out what.
For all reasons, should be lighting him up.
I mean, we'll find out what, because, I mean, Floyd's a better boxer.
The shorter boxer.
Floyd's a better boxer. Like, Floyd's a better boxer.
Floyd's a better boxer.
If you really want to spend your money, you can give it to me, and I'll tell you Floyd's a better boxer. I can't tell you that Floyd won't carry him. I can't tell you that it won't be competitive, but Floyd's a better boxer. So you heard it here first. Floyd's a better boxer. Like, I don't know what more to say. Now, there's no finding out, Bruce. He's the better boxer.
He's the better boxer, but we'll find out who wins the match. That's what I'm saying. That's not.
If Floyd Mayweather loses to Logan Paul, he either slipped on a banana peel or he slipped on a banana peel. Like, I don't know.
Or he... He got old that one night that old fighters get old, you know.
Old Floyd Mayweather still should beat Logan Paul.
We will see.
We shall see. Like, in a geriatric Floyd Mayweather should beat a prime Logan Paul.
Boxing, on paper, you're absolutely correct. The only thing that could happen here that I can see is if he just gets that one shot, you know, that one shot in. But we'll see. Like I said, I'm not going to predetermine anything. On paper, it's Floyd Mayweather. What is the odds on that? 900 to 1 or something?
There shouldn't be odds.
There are.
There shouldn't be.
There are. There are odds. I was like 10 to 1 or something when I first looked at it.
I mean, again, I made $700 on, you know, Roy Jones and Mike Tyson. So, like, I know about the odds, but I still don't think there should be odds.
That's why I don't bet fights, because I hate the fact you bet on the favorite to win $10 when you bet $100 in certain cases.
Well,
but
I mean,
we'll see.
I bet the draw with Tyson and Jones because I didn't even know they could have a winner. I thought it was a draw only, you know, exhibition.
So, we were so brilliant to do that. But, you know, the over-under is always a good bet. I mean, again, to each his own. If you're into betting, take a look at it. But the odds are there if you think you can get a good.
Take the over. Floyd will carry into the over. I promise you that.
Find out which way Floyd bet and go bet with Floyd. Whatever Floyd bet, make that bet and put a bunch of money on it because he knows what he's doing. Hey, the Wayne Gretzky 1979 rookie card sold for $3.75 million.
These numbers are just insane to me, Bruce. Every week that goes by, you start throwing out bigger and bigger numbers for, you know, pieces of cardboard. And I'm just like, damn.
It's just amazing. It's just amazing.
Right. I've decided. So I'm sure you're aware of this. Episode 500 is coming up.
Yes.
And we're trying to put together some things. We'll keep people abreast on that. But what I want to do is get together with you, maybe Brian, if he's free, and open up my Foot Locker of cards from the 70s, 80s, 90s. And
that would actually be a fun show.
Go through
together,
it.
Together, we'll do that. I'll get Brian on the show.
It'll be something. I mean, we'll have to just kind of be rolling all night because it's going to take a while to go through it. But I figure, you know, we get some dinner, drinks.
Oh, talking about in person.
Yes, of course.
Okay, yeah. You let me know.
I get my second COVID shot right after this show.
Okay. Let's work something out. I'll even give you some advice how to not bring so many cards, tell you which ones to bring that could be.
No. That's the surprise, Bruce. I don't want to open this thing until we get it to your house. It's a Foot Locker. I don't know. It's a gigantic Foot Locker. It's heavy. It's like 95 pounds.
Wow. That's going to take some doing.
All right. But it'll be fun.
Maybe that's the one time you'll finally come over to the...
I've been to your house before. It's not the new one.
Not the new one?
No, that's what I said. I've been to your house before. It's not the new one. Yeah, well, I mean, baby steps.
I got you. Yeah, it's definitely baby steps. All right, TJ, anything you want to tell the audience? Time to sign off.
This weekend. I'll be down in Cancun for Combat Jiu-Jitsu. You can watch it live on UFC Fight Pass. It is all about the welterweights. Eddie Bravo and Victor Davila, it's their new take on combat grappling. Jiu-Jitsu on the floor, similar to EBI rules, but open hand palm strikes. So check it out. I believe it is Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Hey, open hand jiu-jitsu, combat jiu-jitsu, Eddie Bravo's combat jiu-jitsu. I'm telling you, that's exciting jits.
It's fun.
Exciting to watch. It's fun to watch. It really is. There's a UFC this weekend, Rozenstruik versus Sakai at the Vegas Apex, the UFC Apex. I will not be announcing. Good card, though. You got Walt Harris on the card against Marcin Tybura. Very, very cool. Tom Breeze is back against Antonio Arroyo. Montana De La Rosa against Ariane Lipsky. That's a good fight. Very good.
It's a fun fight card. It's one that, you know, it's not a pay-per-view, and it shouldn't be a pay-per-view because it's not of that caliber, but it's a fight card that definitely commands your attention and time. And if you sit down in front of the television on Saturday night, I think you'll be pleased with what you see.
I think so too. But you know, the pay-per-view of all pay-per-views is June 12th. Can't wait.
Oh my goodness.
Going to be a big one. All right, everybody. I will be back next week. We will be back next week with another guest right before the big show. Also on millions.co, my new site, millions.co. I am doing an Ask Me Anything on June the 9th before the big event pay-per-view on June 12th, all about UFC 263. So check me out at millions.co, sign up, and let's have a little one-on-one action, and you can ask me anything you want. We'll talk about the fights, and we'll share a little UFC time together. I'm looking forward to that. It's one of the cool things at millions.co. And my shirts, man, I'm getting pings. People love those shirts. The new shirts that I have at millions.co.
Yeah, we saw it on the show with Sam. I think you put
yeah,
the phone
yeah,
up the screen.
Really
look
cool.
Good. Look good.
Really cool. All right, everybody, take care. Enjoy yourselves. Make sure you pick up your bottle of Puncher's Chance through Drizzly.
Think of it like it's raining a little bit. It's a little bit drizzly outside.
Drizzly.com. If it's not at your local store, just go to drizzly.com. They're delivering directly to 45 states in the United States. If you're in California, go to sipwhiskey.com and get your bottle of Puncher's Chance to enjoy your UFC shows
just,
the next
just
two
go
weeks.
To the liquor store. It's everywhere.
Just go and tell them you want them to bring it in. If it's not there, it is pretty much everywhere.
It is.
It's all good. Thank you, TJ. I appreciate that.
No help. Worries.
All right, everybody. Set your goals. Write them down. Before I say that, when you're listening to the show, listen to everything Sheriff Villanueva said. Take into note where we are in this state and in this country right now. It's not pretty. That's all I can say. And it takes people like Sheriff Villanueva to get us back on the right track again, which from everything he said, and I agree with everything he said, he's on target. And I think you do too, TJ.
I mean, these are things that are above my pay grade. I don't know how
mine
to come
too,
down
friend.
On a lot of that stuff, but obviously the sheriff is passionate about what he believes, you know, needs to be done to fix things. And he's the elected official. So I will defer to him on all those matters.
I will too. And I will be voting for him when that time comes again. All right, everybody, set your goals, write them down, step out on that path. And when you do, be the best you can be, because that means you're winning. And that's what we're all about on It's Time Radio, is winning and enjoying life. So big cheers, no fears. Have a good week, everybody. We'll be back next week. Buffer out.